What I miss about it, and maybe the worst part of the transition was just the military piece of it. You know, we were selected for a reason, and we got changed too with our training, especially as an Air Force pilot. I think probably any warfighter, I shouldn't just say an Air Force pilot, but any warfighter actually gets selected to do what they do for a reason. I mean, they know what type of person they want. And we are that type of person, and we do get changed. So that's hard to overcome when you got to go back out and you got to work in a world that's completely, completely different. And now you're trying to create something. You're trying to create a business, trying to create value, trying to, you know, have people see that you're, you know, that their money is worth them to give to you. So that was the hardest thing, was just that transfer from the military to the real world and how it really goes down, because there was no safety net underneath me.
No, there's not. And I think that's something that we all learn as we move out of the military. For all the guys who have never made that transition, who are going to in the future, or guys who weren't in the military, it is a stressful transition for all of us. And I don't mean that you're not going out to earn a new job with the airlines or whatever the case is, but just that leaving one thing and moving on to the next, that's stressful for anybody. It's very stressful when you've almost been brainwashed to an extent, the way military guys are, and to walk out of that. And that's not necessarily, to me, I think it's one of the best things that you can do physically and mentally for yourself. But the other thing that I think is even more important than that, by the way, this was, I'm going to give myself a pat on the back. This is a killer segue, is changing your diet to correct the stuff to help with that stress of not only walking away from a job or transitioning to a new one or changing vocations altogether, or anything that comes in between there. Because Frank, and I know you'll get into this later, I was one of those guys who I always thought I could outwork my mouth. And for people who know me, they think that might mean me how much I talk. That's not what I'm talking about. It is, I always thought I could outrun how much I ate, how I could outlift, I could outdo anything, how much I drank, how much I ate, just by working out. It didn't hit me until just recently, probably in the last 6 months, that not only is that not true, that it's impossible, that doesn't work. And I have looked at everything through the lens of the modern diet, and I didn't understand any of it. So in your professional opinion, your synopsis of it all, can you run down a quick snapshot of how we got to where we are today in dietary terms?
Yeah, it started back in the 50s, and it was by a guy named Ansel Keys, and he was at the University of Minnesota. And it's not just a Wisconsin guy bashing on Minnesota here.
No, but you can do that. I mean, that's our thing. No offense to Minnesota people, but the Vikings are a terrible franchise. I kid.
But that's where this guy was doing his research, and he had the ear of the United States and the government. So, but what he proposed something called the fat hypothesis. And after observing in southern Italy the highest concentration of centurions in the world, he hypothesized that the Mediterranean-style diet, which we all know, which was low in animal fat, protected against heart disease, and that the diet high in animal fats led to heart disease. So the results of what later became known as the 7-country study appeared to show that serum cholesterol was strongly related to coronary health disease and mortality, both at the population and individual level. So as a result of all this, in 1956, representatives of the American Heart Association appeared on television to inform the people that a diet that included large amounts of butter, lard, eggs, beef, all that stuff would lead to coronary heart disease. This resulted in the American government, you know, recommending that people adopt a low-fat diet in order to prevent heart disease. And this also coincided with President Eisenhower's heart attack that he had had. So
What great marketing for them.
Yeah, so it really, really took hold. So, yeah, you can take that for what it's worth. But this is just history. This is just what had happened. But, you know, Keyes had concluded that saturated fats as found in milk and meat had adverse effects, while unsaturated fats found in vegetable oils had beneficial effects. So that's why we've been doing what we've been doing for 50 years and the way that we all were raised and what we're still being told. It's changing a bit, but we're still primarily be tolding that. But there was, so anyways, so his seven country study was actually, I think it was 26 or 27, 28 countries that he looked at. But as you see what I just said, it's seven country study because he made his data conform to those, his data conformed to only seven of the countries. So that's what he used to push this through. So, but there was another guy out there, a British physiologist, John Yudkin, who disagreed with him naming sugar. Especially fructose, so that's the fruit, the sugar in fruit, and you know, high fructose corn syrup. I mean, we all know that's bad, but he named sugar and especially fructose that was the cause of heart disease, cavities, obesity, liver disease, and a bunch of forms of cancer. So suffice it to say, Yudkin was ridiculed and his career was ruined because of it. Again, could get into a big evil story as to why the sugar industry and things, but the science was there. He was correct. And the science is even more overwhelming now that it's sugar is pointing to it and that fat is not the evil culprit and things. So that's how things came about. And it just took hold and it stayed that way for a long, long time. And it wasn't really, you know, that detrimental to Americans and to us until the mid to late 80s when refined foods and things started to really hit the market and start coming out there. And now everything is, you know, now, you know, I joke that kids, you know, they eat fruit roll-ups for fruit. That's what they think is fruit or whatever. Or the government even says that a serving of ketchup is a vegetable. It's like, come on, you know. But anyways, sugar's white death. It instigates a cascade of problems in our biochemistry, and that's the big culprit behind it. And it's because of insulin. And insulin drives fat storage. It doesn't allow for the fat to be burned in your body. So it's a double whammy that you go through. Most don't realize where the hidden sugars come from as well. So you got your refined flours, pastas, rice, dairy milk, soy, coconut milk, because they're all heated and pasteurized. They basically convert to sugar when they hit your gut. So a glass of skim milk is right there with drinking a bottle of Gatorade. It converts to pure sugar. So not, and then you pour your skim milk on your cereal and you're just eating teaspoons and teaspoons of sugar. But this was all said to be okay. And then that jacks your insulin, as people know. And that's where the whole hormonal cascade, and that's your weight control. Insulin is being found to be the big culprit in disease. You know, they're calling dementia type 3 diabetes. So your brain is becoming resistant to the effects of glucose, of sugar, and that's where the amyloid plaques and these things are coming from. So they've coined it type 3 diabetes. And again, it just comes down to sugar, which is also the refined carbs and pastas and things like that, cookies and cakes. It's not just the frosting on the cake, it's actually the cake itself and the bagel. But that's, you need to control that, and you do that with a low carb diet, and then you got to replace those carbs with something, and you need to bring the fats in. And that's the crux of what I teach people to do. Not that you have to go hardcore to the left or to the right or however you want to look at it. You don't have to go hardcore one way to do it, but you need to do it to a certain extent and control things. Or you're going to still have those effects, and it's going to get you. And it's the sugar and the insulin that's causing the heart disease and the cardiovascular disease. Everything that we talked about was wrong, and you need to increase fat. It's not, you know, so, you know, Keyes back in the 50s and 60s and 70s when he pushed all this stuff was saying no fat, and now we're fat phobic. We hardly eat any fat, but we're getting fatter. We're getting sicker. Things have doubled or tripled since the 70s on everything. Nothing, you know, low fat and high carbohydrate diets aren't making heart disease go down. They aren't helping dementia. They aren't helping any of that. And every cell in your body needs fat. That's how your cell communicates inside and outside of the body. So if you've got crap fat, you're going to have crap cell walls, which means you're going to have crappy communication. And if you've got crap immune cells, you're going to have crap immunity. And if you have crap brain cells, you're going to have a crappy working brain, and so on. And it just goes on and on and on. And that's just the fat piece. So a little drawn out there, but that's, You need it, and we're not getting it.
Sure. No, but that's, I mean, the modern diet started modernly speaking not so long ago, and it moved into a realm where it eschewed a lot of the stuff out for the average person. And we I mean, I remember my mom giving us, it was all, oh, skim milk, you can't have whole milk or any of that stuff. And eating anything that, my mom always looked for low fat, no fat, whatever, when we were kids. And I thought, okay, maybe it wasn't so bad. And I go into a grocery store and actually going inside the aisles, not staying on the outside, which I rarely do, just to pick up some canned tuna or something like that. And I still see low fat, no fat, or yogurts, no fat, low fat. I'm like, who cares about that? What was the no sugar stuff? But anyways, I think one of the things that our group obviously is so keyed in on is, how is this going to really affect the professional pilot? What kind of issues can they expect, or problems, or how can they overcome something like this in their line of work? Because we think as pilots, well, we're traveling all the time. You know, I don't have time for this, I don't have time for that. So what is the effect, the net effect on the professional pilot?
Yeah, there's well, I figured out two ways to do it. And one way I did for a long time, because that was what we were told to do. So everything that I just told you Ansel Keys was telling us with high carb, low fat, I did it too. I did it for 25 years of my life up until, 10, 12 years ago. And that was, you got to carry a lot of food with you. So, because if you're a carbohydrate burner, so you're eating lots of carbs and you burn carbs primarily, you're gonna last 2, 3 hours, and then you're gonna crash to an extent. You might crash really hard. You might just crash moderately, but you're gonna get hungry. You're gonna be hungry in 2 or 3 hours, and you're gonna have to find food. So you either have to carry a lot of it with you, and you probably remember at work and when we were flying, I always had food with me
Oh
because
yeah,
that's what I.
do you remember the time that we I was commuting? This is when I was at Atlas, and I think you were with Omega,
Yes.
or maybe I was commuting. I was just starting Delta, or I was going down to the interview, or something like that. We ran into each other, and you had a loadout of food, and I'm like, holy shit, man! How do you carry that much stuff? And you said, well, you know, I got this, that, and the other thing. And I mean, and to me, that all looked like pretty healthy stuff, because I was like, all right, well, I'm gonna go grab six beers and, you know, eat a giant bun, burger, whatever. And I kind of couldn't wrap my I still can't wrap my head around it. And I think, you know, it was funny, because I remember you said, oh yeah, look at all bringing the food along. But I think that's when you were starting to go through your evolution and changing a lot of that
Yeah.
stuff.
So I always ate more fat. I always ate, and when I'm talking, fats, carbohydrates, all these things, I'm always talking good, clean sources of the stuff, grass
Sure.
fed, all those things. So good carbs, not sugary carbs, not grains and things. And again, I'm in a different world than where most people are at. So I'm not trying to grab people and put them in my world. That's what I do with my clients is that I meet them wherever they're at. So
Sure.
it's just where I'm at.
Yep.
Everybody's in a different spot, and some of the stuff might seem completely unreasonable. But that route, because I was a carb burner, because I was eating the typical, in a typical fashion, very good clean foods, but I was taking my grass-fed meats. I take eggs because I could get them through. And it was a cooler, so to say, but it was a soft cooler, looked like a
Yep.
big gym bag and things. But I had to carry that and I had to stock that. And with the airlines, that gets tough because you're min turning. But what I've converted to over the last couple of years is a very high fat, low carbohydrate diet. So a ketogenic diet or just a low carb diet, where you're going to start, you're going to get yourself off of being a carb burner and become a fat burner. And with being a fat burner, you have so much more reserves in your body to burn fat that you can go 24 hours once you get into it, which only takes a couple of days. You can go 24 hours without getting hungry, because your body gets adapted and starts burning that way. But as a commercial pilot, you only have a few options when you're on the road. And we know the terminal food is not good for us. But if you're a carb burner, which most of us are, well, I should say most of you guys are. I'm not anymore. You're going to crave them, and then you're going to be hungry in a couple hours. Your insulin's going to spike to deal with the carbs that you eat, and then your insulin's going to drop below your baseline, that's when you get lightheaded, you get cranky, and a whole bunch of other symptoms that you can get. You go get that double frappuccino because you need to bounce back before that next leg. You repeat day after day after day. You have insulin around all the time, so you store sugar as fat. You crave sugar and carbs. You eat carbs. Your insulin stores it for you, and it's just this vicious cycle that just keeps going round and round. So insulin is called the fat storage hormone. So when you eat carbohydrates and break them down into sugars, you need insulin to drive it into the muscle. That I think most people understand that concept. And then it drops, and then you get hungry, and your body starts to signal your brain that you need more carbs because that's what you do. So then when you start to do that, your insulin comes up, you eat the carbs, it comes up even more, and you get this cycling up and down. And insulin stores fat, and insulin keeps you from burning fat. So as a carb burner and you're cycling like this, you go work out, you're not going to burn your fat. You're going to burn maybe a little bit of it, but you're not going to burn much of it, no matter how much you work out and what you do. Hence what you were saying at the intro to this whole thing. So that's just what's going on. That's just the science. That's biochemistry. And it's actually very simple to solve. And that's just getting the good fats in your diet and getting those carbs under control. You don't have to completely eliminate them. You'll be surprised how many you can eat and what you can eat. You'll still be happy. It's not that restrictive, but you're just not hungry. You're not hungry, and it's easy. When I teach this course, live and online, when I teach it with people, I have a section where I want them to fast for 24 hours, and it's not long enough. I need to make them fast for like 3 days because it's just not. I would make them fast for 3 days just because people think they fast because it's hard. Well, it's hard because you're a carb burner and you get hungry in 2 hours and you crash and you feel like crap. Then your brain starts messing with you. I want the bagel. I want this. I want that. I want the potato, whatever. And you lose. You go eat it. But if you're a fat burner, it's a piece of cake. You go 24 hours at the drop of a hat, and sometimes you gotta force yourself to go eat. And that's really, really nice on the road because basically, you terminate the terminal food. It's just over. It doesn't bother you. You don't have to go run down there and grab something.
I think a lot of the guys who are looking for a way out of that vicious cycle, to say the least, would love hearing that. Several of the rest of us, we still like our double frap, map, calf, lats, or whatever, all that stuff pushed together. However, I think we can all stand to make a bit of a change. So, how do we mitigate what you just talked about, and where do we get started in kind of those must avoids, just the basic groundwork, so somebody can go, hey, I listened to Frank and Adam have a discussion on the podcast the other day, and maybe I'll just start with the basics, and then maybe I'll check out franklynutritious.com, or I'll go to the library and get a book or whatever, and start kind of piecing all that puzzle together. So kind of the mitigation piece, where do we go from here?
Yeah, and I touched on a bit of it. I'll kind of rehash it over in a little more logical sense. But you're going to clean up your carbs, so you're going to get rid of those refined products. So a lot of even the breads and things that you think that you're eating are a whole grain and things aren't gonna. They're going to be enriched flours, and they're going to convert to sugar when they hit your stomach. So you want to start cutting those, and you also want to be leery of fruit. It's sugar, so it's fructose. So that's a fruit sugar. You can have fruit, but you can't have 4 bananas a day. You can't have it late in the day. Same thing with think about your kids. So when you got a 30-pound toddler, giving them a 10-inch banana might not be the best thing because that's like you and I eating three or four of them. That's a lot of sugar. So you might want to just give them a third of it, things like that. But sugar's got a lot of fruit or a lot of sugar. Fruit's got a lot of sugar, so you want to watch out for that.
I knew what you meant.
So it's primarily vegetables or what you're going to want to eat. And again, you got to watch the starchy ones too, the potatoes and things. But again, this is dependent on where people are at. So if you're not eating any whole foods, you need to just start incorporating them. Again, you don't have to, okay, I'm going to jump right to salads every day and lots of fat on it and things when you're eating in the terminals every day and getting that burrito and stuff. It's just get rid of some of that. Maybe not have the bun with things. Have a little bit more salad. Make sure you get the fat. Put butter on things. in the restaurants where you can get them. Because fat, there's so much more bang for the buck. You get twice the caloric value out of it. And plus, it'll when you start to metabolize it, it'll help stabilize your insulin, so you won't get those cravings either. And then you can start burning the fat because the insulin's not present in high amounts. And what fat can do for you is that I'm lean. You've heard my background, runner, triathlete. I'm a lean, 6 foot tall, 100, I'm 160 pounds now, but racing I was 145. But even at 145, I could walk from New York to Florida on my fat stores. So that's how much bang for the buck you get out of it. So it's another staying power that you have and willpower that you have to keep from, crashing and bonking and needing more sugar. You're only going to last about an hour and a half to 2 hours on sugar, and you're going to run out of gas, and then you're going to be looking again for that double Frappuccino. And you can get into this state of burning fat pretty easy. You need to know what you're doing. You can read some books, and there's a bunch of good books out there, but people still notoriously mess it up. That's why I have a course on it, because they don't understand, what they don't understand the biochemistry of the body, and there's a lot of pitfalls and corners you can get shoved into that are going to be unhealthier than what you're trying to do something healthy, but now you've just put yourself in a worse situation than where you came from. Sure. So you got to know what you're doing, and you got to have some good guidance, And it's called the ketogenic diet. That's just when you burn fat, you break it down into ketones. That's where the word keto and ketogenesis and ketogenic and all that stuff comes from, because you're burning carbohydrates, you break down into glucose, fat, you break down into ketones. So that's where these words come from, is all. It's just a different fuel source. Like I said, you can fast forever when you get on it, because your body has that continual source of energy. So when you're on a 10-12 hour day would be a long day in the commercial business. But you could go that long easy without eating. Not that you have to do that, but you could get away with eating once a day, and not go make really bad decisions, because you won't be starving and famished, and you want just anything. And then along with the working out, you got to be consistent, but you got to be different. You got to do it differently than you did in the past. You don't want to blast yourself. You want to take long enough to rest in between your hard days. That was what I did wrong. When I did the long distance triathlon and adventure racing and thing wasn't healthy from a health standpoint. It wasn't how you get to the finish line, at 100 years old. It's very tough on your body. It beats the crud out of you, and it's very damaging. So things that you can do is you want to make sure you rest in between your hard workouts. And when you do your hard workouts, you can do shorter, more intense stuff. So people are hearing about HIIT workouts. So the high intensity interval workouts, HIIT, or Tabata workouts, which are 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off. And you do that 8 times, which is just a 4 minute workout. So these workouts, you can do 1 or 2 sets of these things. You hit it hard for 8 minutes, and then you warm up, you cool down, you're done in 15 minutes. And then on the other days, you need to rest. So walking is so underrated with men especially, but just getting out there for a 45 minute walk, 2 days in between your hard workouts will do an incredible amount for your weight control. And just because it's so hormonal that every day that you hit it hard, and the longer that you hit it hard for during those episodes, really takes a toll on your body, and it takes time for your hormones to reset. So you need to do that. So you can hit it every third day, and then you get on a bike, the hotel or whatever, just go for a walk and just keep it super conversational pace, easy.
It's funny you mentioned the high intensity high intensity interval workouts. I'm pretty big into that. We were talking about that a little bit, and one of the things I noticed is just doing anywhere between 1 and 3 a week, and no more at the max.
Yeah.
Where I'm doing maybe, although I don't look like it, I do like to run, and I'm actually. I'm not the slowest human being on the planet. I'm definitely not the fastest or even remotely fast, but in the Clydesdale division, I normally kick a lot of ass. So I can be proud of myself for being a fast fat boy. But the thing that's interesting that I noticed is I, having an 11-week-old, I don't get to run nearly as much as I used to. But since I've incorporated this, not only have I not lost any time on my 5K, I've actually
Exactly.
gotten faster.
Yep.
And I don't notice if I have to take 3 days off or 4 days off or even a week off from running, the get up and go again is not nearly as painful as it was when I used to take 3 days off from running, and I would just do the distance, pound, 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 pound.
Yep.
How I just feel so much better. So I'm a huge fan of that. And the walking thing, for all you commuters out there, you know that is the simple greatest thing. I pop in a podcast or something like that, and I will just walk around the Detroit terminal for an hour, and then maybe go take a nap. And dude, I feel like $1 million after I do that. Instead of, I got to run, I got to lift weights, you don't have to do it that much. And I think Frank's really nailing it there. This is for us in our world too. This, I think, to me, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, and I definitely, we've got a little bit more to cover on this workout stuff, but the workout stuff should be the easiest part of what we're trying to do. Like, you only have to do a little bit. It's the diet stuff that we've got to focus on, and the workout stuff is like, hey, if you cannot focus and get in this ass kicker of a workout, who cares? Just get something done. And then when you do have 20 minutes to focus on a high interval routine, go knock that out. But if you got some time, walk around the terminal, do something. You know, you don't even have to really break a sweat. Just stay active.
Yeah. And that's the other nice piece of it, is that you won't get all that worked up in some of these workouts,
mm-hmm.
you know, and especially when you want to be taking some good time in between them. You know, you want 3 to 4 minutes, 3 to 4 minutes in between them, because you want, depending on what you want to try to do, but some of those workouts, you want that space in there so your energy system completely regenerates, so you can do the next one and you can max it out when you hit it. So, you know, and then along with, you know, the hits and things and the Tabata workouts, you know, replace one of those every 7 to 10 days with a sprint workout. So if you like to run, or if you could do it on a stair stepper, you could do it really on anything, but it's just that sprint effort where you're going all out for that, you know, 15 to 20, you know, and there's no set time. There is some science on stuff, but some people do them for 30, some people do them for 20, some people do them for 5, you know, be careful with them, work into them, but you know, you're going to do them all out. I like to run uphill. I do it here because I feel like if I'm, and I was a runner forever and I understand running, that if I'm running up the hill, I'm not going to get, I don't think I'll get injured, because if I'm on a flat on a track and I go run 100 or a 200 all out, I'm probably going to go down on a heap because I'm going to blow my hamstring or something, because I'm just going to be turning over faster than I can do and I'm getting older. But running up the hill, I just won't have that turnover, but it still kicks the crud out of me.
Sure.
So that's what I do. You know, then you walk back down, you take 3 to 4 minutes, completely recover, and then you go again. Do 4 to 6 reps of that, and that's going to go so far for you. It's going to be great bang for the buck on that. You can do weights kind of the same way. You know, we traditionally lift weights, and you can Google stuff on this, and you can find all kinds of information. It's called time on tension. So if you're doing, let's just say a curl, because you can kind of see my arms a little bit, but if you're just doing a bicep curl, and you go 1, 2, 3, and you know, you kind of do them, you know, you're not supposed to do them that fast, but let's just say you do a second up, a second down, and you do 10, that's 10 seconds both ways. Now if you, and then you do another set, you know, you rest, and then you do another set, and you rest, you do another set, you do 3, maybe 4 sets, 10 seconds up, 10 seconds down, you've done 40 seconds up and 40 seconds down. So you can do something called time on tension workout. So you had 40 seconds of time on tension. Now you could go, you can do that same thing with a weight that you can only do that many times, and you're gonna go 5 seconds up, and then you're gonna come 5 seconds down, and you're gonna do your set of 5. So that's what, 10 seconds each one, that's 50 seconds. So you just did in one set, you just did 50 seconds of time on tension on your muscle coming up and your muscle going down.
Thanks for joining us for part 2 of this 3-part series with Frank Alvarez on staying fit in the cockpit. Catch part 3 next time on the Pilot Network podcast, and if you just can't wait, you can find all 3 episodes right now on our Patreon at patreon.com/pilotnetwork.